So the project of the railroad really became the driving force that sped Confederation up during this time. And this is because there was huge financial investment. Building a railroad would further their ability to extract resources from the boreal forests, from the forests of British Columbia. And it would allow for great, great capital increase. And the railroad would further allow for increased logging and mining, et cetera. And it would be a way of holding kind of unified control over this whole region. So the central project of Confederation was to occupy this vast land from coast to coast. And part of how they thought that that was possible was to plant European settlers there and to further establish Christianity in these regions and commerce. That's what it meant to act out Confederation, so to speak. So with rumors of an emerging nation state on the rise and the Confederation of Canada, or the Canadian Expansion Project, which operated primarily out of Toronto and Ottawa, with rumors of this in the air, the Métis, this community of about 12,000 people living along the Red River, they organized. And they said, oh my goodness, if we become part of Canada, what's going to happen to our land? We've been living here for generations. What will happen to us? So the Métis organized and petitioned for recognition of their lands and their title to their lands to Ottawa, and they received no response. So they continued to advocate for themselves, and the clergy did, they really helped also in this process and got no answers. And Bishop McRae, in his writing at this time, you see he's starting to get nervous, and he says, uh-oh, this isn't going to be good. If they don't clarify the rights of the squatters, as he called the Métis, community been there generations, and somehow they're squatters. He said, if they don't give them the right, they better bring soldiers. So Bishop McRae wrote Ottawa and said, send soldiers. So the Métis, living along the Red River for generations, they weren't seen as legitimately owning their land, because to own land, it had to be recognized by a settler authority. Again, this is this paternalistic relationship that the Indigenous peoples aren't considered able to govern themselves. And so the Indigenous approach to land was communal. The Métis had set family plots, but a lot of it was shared. But their titles weren't recognized by Ottawa. So as Ottawa is working on this Canadian Confederation expansion project, they sent surveyors out from Ontario to the Red River community who began to just walk around with measuring sticks around people's homes. And they wouldn't talk to the Métis. They acted as if they weren't there. So naturally, violence kind of was breaking out, and the Métis were really upset. But the surveyors from Ontario plotted all of Red River like a grid that literally sliced through the Métis homes. This reflects the entitlement sentiments that I've talked about of the world, settler worldview, that the Indigenous peoples basically don't have right to govern themselves or their land. So Louis Riel, famous Métis thinker and political leader, and considered himself a religious prophet. He's pictured here in the middle. So Louis Riel attempted to bring political unity between all the Métis, the French and the English, and they began to organize and advocate for their rights. So they organized a provisional government of Manitoba to negotiate with Canada. Bishop McRae represented the English on their government, but Bishop McRae disclosed insider information to the Canadians. So several Anglican priests framed the mobilization of the Métis under Louis Riel as a threat to Protestantism, and they called for an armed resistance to Riel. In speaking to a crowd of Anglophone and Francophone Métis at Red River, Louis Riel stated, quote, "We must seek to preserve the existence of our own unique people. I do not wish that anything I will do will hurt the stranger," referring to the settlers coming. "But we must primarily do what is right. All outsiders are to be looked upon as strangers. They do not appreciate the circumstances in which we live, and they are not likely to fully enter into our views and enter into our feelings. We must, at the same time, respect ourselves. We are a peculiar people in an exceptional circumstance. The work of the Anglican clergy at this time was inflammatory, and they advocated against Louis Riel, and they advocated for white supremacist ideas, allegiance to the British Empire, and encouraged settlement. Their work was largely successful, and during the Métis consolidation, there was much fragmentation, and the Anglo-Métis had received a new identity from their churchmanship. And so many of them, they gave their allegiance to the English Empire and they left their Métis communities behind. And in 1869, the Red River was divided. Catholic against Protestant, whites who sought to govern over the Métis, and then within the Métis community itself, the Anglo and the French, they were pinned against each other. And the drums of Canadian government were pounding at their doors demanding confederation. Before consulting with the local peoples and their self-made government, pictured here led by Riel, Ottawa chose a leader for Manitoba. They chose a governor. And this was a famous Orange man, an Anglo-Protestant known for being a big, you know, advocate for the Orange movement. And they appointed him as governor of Red River. And the Métis, who were organized and who had been trying to deal with Ottawa directly, they learned about this through the media. So that'd be like going to Facebook and finding out you don't own your house anymore. Their government was thus not considered legitimate by the Canadians. And in 1869, this new governor, McDougall, was sent to claim the office in Red River as lieutenant governor and solidify the pending movement to acquire the land into the so-called Dominion of Canada. Now, as you can imagine, his entrance into Red River was blocked. The Métis said, "You can't be here. We don't recognize Ottawa's governance over our region." And they demanded consultation for the recognition of their rights to their homes. McDougall retreated to the States, because the Métis weren't moving a budge and there would have been more armed conflict. But after a month, he returned to the region at nighttime. And he stood over the Red River, and under the darkness of night, he read the official statement by the Canadian sovereigns, and he read aloud over the land his right to be lieutenant governor, even though there was no one there to hear it. But that was all he needed. He was now governor. And again, this, you can totally see how this reflects the staking of the cross in the land. It's this ongoing ripple effect of the doctrine of discovery. So all you have to do is come up at night and, you know, read something from someone's house, and then you can move in. So McDougall invoked these principles of the terra nullius, the empty land, and the doctrine of discovery, and claimed Canadian ownership over Rupert's Land. This action symbolized settler entitlement that the region already belonged to Canada. All he had to do was announce it. So this rhetoric was reinforced by many Anglican Canadians, from preachers to political thinkers, even here in Toronto and our local churches. In their sermons during this time, they said, "It's God's will for there to be a Dominion of Canada, and we are entitled to Rupert's Land, and the Métis aren't qualified to govern themselves." Throughout Anglo-Canada, the Métis were portrayed as violent, as savage, disorganized, and ungovernable. One of the surveyors charting the usurpation of Métis lands at Red River was Charles Mair, and he was a card-carrying member of the Canada First movement here in Toronto. And Mair shared news with Canada First in 1869 that the Métis were resisting amalgamation of Manitoba into the nation of Canada. And so their team organized a group called the 12 Apostles to resist Métis self-governance. After the Métis so the 12 Apostles went around churches and tried to mobilize men to resist the Métis. So a bunch of Orange men from Toronto and the regions around here in Ottawa, they went and they organized and they went to try to overthrow the Métis government with armed resistance. And so battle broke out. And in this, several people were captured by the Métis and nobody was killed. But they took in a guy named Thomas Scott. And Scott eventually was tried and then executed for plotting to kill their president, which is Louis Riel. And this was really Louis Riel's downfall, essentially, because what happened was then all through Anglo media, throughout Toronto and Ottawa especially, Thomas Scott's death was, he was Jesus. You know, he was bringing civilization, he was bringing light to these heathens, and these evil Métis killed him in cold blood. And so there was tons of press about this. Stories were written, sermons preached on Thomas Scott. I read documents like just from near my hometown, Newmarket, where Thomas Scott's death was preached about in every pulpit. And so the 12 apostles spread propaganda vilifying the Métis as violent savages, uncivilized, and they called for a strong military action against, and I quote from their document, a few hundred dirty, ignorant, miserable half-breeds who were threatening the creation of Canada. The apostles propagated ideologies that Anglophones were entitled to the great, vast Western frontier, and they formed something called the Northwestern Immigration Aid Society in 1870 to mobilize and support settlers moving to Red River to, quote, submerge the Métis population. The emotional reactivity exemplifies the intersection of myth-making, racialization, and settler entitlement to the wild and the uncivilized. And it also shows the paternalism of Anglo-Canadian nationalism in this time and how instrumental it was in the expansion project of the Dominion of Canada. In 1870, the Métis government negotiated with the Parliament of Canada that under the Manitoba Act, the territory would enter the nation of Canada only under the condition that the Métis would be able to maintain their 1,400,000 acres of land. And Prime Minister John A. Macdonald agreed. He said, sure. So the Manitoba Act was passed. Manitoba is brought in. Louis Riel becomes a member of Parliament. And the Métis are supposed to be able to keep their land. But under pressure from the 12 apostles and the Canada First movement, John A. Macdonald moves back from his position. And he sells the Métis lands in a lottery-style lottery, which gave away the Métis land mostly to European settlers moving in, like these ads portray. Many Métis in this process lost their homes, and most of them were forced to move further west, like Gabriel Dumont moved to Saskatchewan in this time. And Louis Riel, a bond was put over his head, and he had to flee to the U.S., where he lived in hiding. So he's kicked out of Parliament after being so greatly villainized through the propaganda of this time spread by people like the 12 apostles. And so then Colonel Wolseley's troops came to Red River to ensure that the transfer of lands and to enforce the new Canadian government. And when this happened, when Wolseley's troops showed up, Bishop McRae sent a party to bring them to Red River and to show them the way. So it's a really interesting example of the bishop literally, you know, drawing them in and pulling them. This is the way to the settlement. So the establishment of the Nation of Canada embodied the colonial desire to civilize what was west of Ontario, to spread Christianity and to govern the children of the wastelands, develop industry, and become a unified, wealthy nation through this process of civilizing the wild. Bishop McRae stated in the 1867 report that, my anxious hopes, quote, are entertained that the time is not so far distant when vast tracts of this land in this great country will be made accessible to immigrants from Europe. The Anglican Church's mandate in Rupert's Land was to establish Zion through the spreading of British civilization, religion, industry, and morality and masculinity. The Anglican Church implemented their moral imperative of civilization through the support of the militarization of this region and annexation of Métis territory by under the Canadian banner. Their work was inextricably linked to the expansion of Anglo-Canadian Empire under this banner of subjugating the wild. And the Anglican clergy of this time participated in furthering narratives that settler powers solely possessed the right to be the active agents in shaping the story of the raw and wild Canada. The Indigenous wastelands weren't looked upon as merely childlike and primitive, but were also considered dangerous. So Indigenous lands were thus commodified for settlers, and Indigenous bodies were policed under foreign governance. The hope of my project is that the recapitulation of these myths, cosmologies, and actions that led to the process of Confederation, the disinheritance of Indigenous peoples of Rupert's Land, and the generation of national identity, and ultimately an entire legal structure of schooling and the land claim system and the corporate right to resource extraction, that these kind of fundamental building blocks, so to speak, can be destabilized, so that our ongoing conversations and settler imaginations of entitlement can be shaken up.